Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everybody? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my pick-and-pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
NBA champion, Josh Cohen.
I'm sorry, are you part of the roster?
Absolutely.
Wow. I hope you get a championship belt, too.
I'm going to get a championship ring soon.
Ooh, baby. Banger in the paint, Rajon Walia. How you feeling?
Well, I lost my voice, but I just have to say Josh is just as deserves a ring just as much as Jeremy Lin does.
Hey,
Probably more, actually.
We all saw that video of Jeremy Lin fixing his shooting sleeve, all right? Come on, show some respect.
That video on Instagram was hilarious. That two-minute clip of him coming in garbage time with that game and just, like, bringing the ball up the court and passing it off. That was great.
Hey, man, he does his job, all right?
Respect. Run that offense.
Exactly. Come on now. As we all know, the Raptors are the 2019 NBA champions of the world. Not really of the world, maybe North America. But nonetheless, it's
okay, hold on a second. I hate when people say that. It is the world. The best basketball players in the world play in the NBA. Therefore, this is the championship of the world.
I don't know, man. Is Josh Smith in the NBA? That's all I got. I'm sorry.
He had to say best player.
That's true. Kobe's not in the NBA anymore. Fine. The champions of the world, Toronto Raptors, they did it. Can we actually believe it? I remember from literally as soon as a trade happened for Kawhi last summer, we were all saying that the Raptors have to get to the finals at least to even have a chance to keep Kawhi. And they've probably exceeded the expectation, right? Like, did either of you actually think that they would win from the beginning of the year? I didn't see this happening. I thought they'd get to the finals and Golden State would just take care of business, but this was incredible.
I mean, I said from the start of the regular season that they were probably the second best team in the NBA, eclipsing the Rockets after the trade. And, you know, as a lot of experts point out throughout the year, it only takes one or two injuries for a team to vault into number one. And we saw that happen in the finals. I mean, winning a championship is not all about, you know, roster building, it's also about luck. And obviously the Raptors got very lucky in the finals with KD being injured and then Klay Thompson having two injuries, the second one being more severe. And hopefully he'll come back at some point next year, though it's unclear right now. But it's a fantastic feeling, obviously. And honestly, it still hasn't really hit me yet that the Raptors are the champions of the world. It's just, it's weird.
Yeah, like it's incredible.
Even after the parade, it still hasn't hit you?
No, not really.
All right.
I still see all the highlight videos of the parade and, you know, the Raptors winning game six. I'm just like, the Raptors are 2019 NBA. It just doesn't sound right.
Fair. All right, then. Raj, what were you saying?
Yeah, I was saying it was incredible just to see them go, like, during the path that they did in the East. Like, they had to play some tough opposition in Philly and Milwaukee just to get to the finals. And this team, when they made the trade for Kawhi, I don't think they were good enough to win the finals. Obviously, the addition of Marc Gasol, I think, was probably one of the more underrated moves that Masai and the front office did to really kind of help solidify this team. But as Josh mentioned, they got, like, lucky. They stayed healthy. And they were a good team on both sides of the ball. I think that's something that kind of doesn't get talked enough about. Like, they were a very good defensive team and they had one of the better offenses, and they had pieces that fit well together, especially with Serge Ibaka and Fred VanVleet coming off the bench. You had two players that could be starters on other NBA rosters, providing a little extra offensive punch. But I agree with Josh. I still can't believe it. I probably won't believe it until next season when the media starts referring to, oh, look, it's the Raptors. Golden State's playing the defending NBA champs, or Miami's playing the defending NBA champs. Then that's when it's going to really hit for me.
I mean, they're not even favorites to win the championship next year. So can you really call them the NBA champs? I don't know.
Yeah, but well, Vegas is preying on the Lakers fans right now at 3-1 odds, despite only having three players on their team, which we'll talk about later on, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the Raptors had one of the tougher roads to the finals since probably the 2011, I believe it was, Mavericks, where the Mavericks went through like the Portland team, which was very talented, mm-hmm. and I think OKC. Who did they play in the conference finals?
San Antonio?
I don't think it was San Antonio, but they played Miami in the finals, obviously.
Yeah.
And that road to the finals was crazy, and Dirk just carried them through, obviously. And they had, you know, Jason Terry, Jason Kidd, Tyson Chandler, a lot of guys off the bench that made contributions. So I think in terms of similarity, I think that team is most similar. But the thing that differentiates them is Toronto has seven, maybe eight players that are two-way players, you know, guys that can both score and play defense, which is very rare to get for a championship team. Most of them are very top heavy, as we've seen the last couple of years, obviously. Golden State had one team where they were pretty deep with, you know, Barbosa off the bench and a few other guys. But overall, most teams build from having three great players, at least in Golden State's case, there's four or five. But Toronto built it with one. And then obviously Lowry is now in the conversation for Hall of Fame. And then Gasol, Pascal, who might become a Hall of Famer someday, obviously, but this team, if they are actually able to keep them together, I think they will be the favorites going into next year because they have a lot of guys locked up, obviously, and nothing's really going to change as long as they can bring back Kawhi and Danny Green.
Do you really need Danny Green?
I think so. Just I mean, who else are you going to sign? Because they don't have a lot of money to spend, right? So it's either Danny Green or you're going to have to put in Norman Powell and as a starting shooting guard, and he's just not reliable. Or hope that OG Anunoby steps up next year, which he might, but I'm not sure that he's really a shooting guard. So,
how much do you think Danny Green's going to command this year, though? Because he made like $10 million this past year.
Yeah, he made $10 million, but even though a lot of teams have cap space right now, they're not going to be inkling to give Danny Green $15 million, which was what an average starter was making last offseason. So, I can see him making between $8 and $12 million in the offseason.
12? Damn. Yeah. You think he lost $3 million because of his like 1.5 rounds of poor play?
No, I think it's more
poor play, poor shooting.
It's just more based on the market, right? Because you have these top level players that are free agents, and then once those guys are taken, I don't really think teams are trying to sign. Like, they've already seen what happened 2 years ago when a bunch of these teams signed like Jan Mahimi for 4 years, $60 million. You don't want to have that kind of situation again going into next offseason when there's even more free agents out there. So I think these guys will be on like 1 or 2 year deals. Like, the smart team will do that, obviously. The stupid teams like the Knicks will sign Julius Randle for like 4 years, $100 million.
Wow. Unnecessary shade, man.
You know what's coming.
All right. Here's a question for both of you. Which is a better slogan right now for Kawhi? The fun guy or Boardman gets paid?
I would have to go with fun guy.
I think it's just neither. It's Boardman gets championships.
Gets titles.
There you go.
Boardman gets titles. That's not bad. I like Boardman gets paid, though, man. The image of someone yelling out Boardman gets paid every time they grab a rebound is insane. Like, what a long thing to say, you know? It's something just like, mine. I got this. Boardman gets paid. Every time you get a rebound, he's calling this out like 10 times a game? God damn.
It's already spread to the playgrounds, too, like at my local basketball pickup game. Every single time this one guy who's like all over the court gets a rebound, people are shouting it out. It's getting annoying already.
That's awful. That's a way to cut yourself out of that gym, man.
Yeah.
I'd hard pass on that place. Yeah. Russ, please tell me about the parade. Obviously, we saw like 2 million people there, and it's like on TV, it looked incredible.
Yeah, like the parade itself was like a great spectacle. And of course, Canada and particularly Toronto hasn't won a championship since like 93. So it's been a long time coming. I think the parade itself was a bit long, and I could tell that some of the players were a bit drained by the end of it, and their speeches kind of were short, and they didn't really have the same energy they had at the beginning of the parade. But it was packed. It was crazy. It was hard to get space, and you could just tell that the longer it went, the more people were actually coming out of work. And by 1 o'clock, I think it was at its peak. And at 1 o'clock, they were supposed to be on the stage, and the streets were packed. Like, they were going less than like 5 kilometers an hour. And obviously, I think the one player who probably didn't even speak at the parade or at the end of the parade, Nathan Phillips, where Marc Gasol was just going on a bender. Like, if you threw if you threw anything at him, he would be drinking it. Like water, wine, probably like straight whiskey, like, and probably a good idea that they didn't let him talk, because I don't think he could have spoke English. He probably would have went full Spanish. It was a good spectacle. I think if you're in the city, definitely worth going to. But it wasn't really worth kind of driving down from Ottawa. I was just lucky enough to be in Toronto that day. What definitely was worth it was the night that they won. That was something else. Like, I enjoyed that more than the actual parade itself. Just people on the streets, really happy, super positive. Everyone was giving each other high fives. The police were super accommodating, and they weren't super aggressive. And overall, it was a great experience. And we obviously have Coactus, who probably was the highlight of the night. And we have the ha from the celebration. That's why Kawhi's a fun guy.
Well, that was the best summary I've ever heard. Man, who is who is funnier on all of this? Jeremy Lin wearing, not funnier, but like more memorable. Jeremy Lin wearing like a custom like Chinese jersey, like number one jersey, which actually looked really dope. Or Eric Moreland playing as Marc Gasol's bodyguard, I'd say his handler. Eric Moreland was behind this guy the whole time, making sure he didn't fall over on a bus. Like, Gasol was going wild out there.
Yeah, I'm going to say Eric Moreland, because I saw Gasol, and no joke, it looked like he woke up late for the parade. Like, he probably woke up hungover. He was in sweats, no team gear, like a black tee.
Just right? A generic black tee.
Yeah, it was a black tee, and he was at the back of the third bus, and like there were moments where he was like leaning on the edge, and like people were holding his arms because like it looked like he could just like flip over. But he was having a good time. He was actually probably the most enthusiastic that I saw personally. Like, I saw all three team buses at the end of the parade, but he was like chanting the crowd. Everyone's going like ole ole ole, and he was kind of leading that. But yeah, I would say Eric Moreland kind of having to be his babysitter.
Eric Moreland's the real MVP.
He just earned his paycheck.
Yeah.
Being a handler for a day. Jay. Josh.
Yes.
How do you feel about, what's more impressive? The fact that KD went out there with a possibly partially torn Achilles, or Klay Thompson playing with, a single hamstring and then running on a torn ACL?
I'm going to have to go with KD.
Really?
For him to come back from that injury just to try to prove people. Like, I think he actually feels, vilified now, and like in his career, that, Golden State Warriors fans are going to absolutely love him the rest of his career if he actually stays there, obviously. And even if he doesn't. And I think that he feels that it was probably worth it to come back from the torn Achilles, or the partially torn Achilles, or whatever that was, in order to try to prove people wrong, and even some of his teammates wrong, as we heard some of the inklings that came out of the Golden State locker room, different articles before Game 5, that, they weren't really sure if KD was even injured, if he just hold himself out for free agency, and he came back to prove all those guys wrong, and he played really well in the first quarter, too. It was actually scary how well he played. And then, of course,
the first time he tries to make a one-on-one.
Yeah,
he looked like regular KD, and then of course the first time he tries to make a one-on-one move, it just snapped, unfortunately, so it's tough to watch.
Yeah, it never came out who was partially talking trash about him, right? Like, we don't have any names?
No, it's just unnamed sources. So
yeah,
but the articles, from the columnists, they're obviously they're very, very credible. Obviously, with the guys like Chris Haynes and Woj and guys like that from ESPN. So you know that they actually received those quotes from players from the Golden State locker room. But yeah, we never actually didn't know if it was like Jonas Gerebko or if it was like whomever on the end of the bench.
It was like Steph or something. It's interesting though, because if you look at the sort of NBA culture 10 years ago, you would never have guys being an unnamed source and just saying, I don't know if he's that hurt. It was kind of the same thing with Kawhi last year in San Antonio, right? When he actively sat himself out. And then you had guys like Tony Parker coming out and saying that his hamstring was more hurt than Kawhi's, or Ginobili saying that he should play. Like, what kind of teammates are these? If you're my teammate, you better ride with me. How are you going to talk trash about how I feel?
He ain't getting away from us that easy. We ride together. We die together. Bad boys for life.
I think it just goes to show that the NBA is more individualistic now, and in San Antonio's case, the veteran player just came out and said it.
Yeah, just like straight up.
Golden State, I just laid in the background.
Yeah, but I think this kind of shows also that I kind of disagree with you, Josh. I think what Klay did was probably more heroic or more impressive, just because KD took a risk and he knew about that risk that had happened to him, and he listened to the outside noise and probably had a bit of a desire to prove those doubters and those people that think he was going to get a ring and that he coasted and joined the easiest path to a ring when he joined Golden State in 2017. And he wanted to prove those people wrong. And now he's going to pay the price because he's going to miss the entirety of next year. And he'll have to kind of recover and he'll have to adjust this game. Like, I think we're understating how big of an injury an Achilles injury is. I know, Josh, you've had one, so you can speak to that, but it definitely makes you a different player, and he's not getting any younger. And there's a huge misperception in the media also that a calf strain has no correlation with an Achilles. Like, that, from my brief medical knowledge, is incorrect. Like, a calf injury can result and puts you at a higher risk for getting an Achilles injury. It wasn't a freak accident. And I think there is a little covering up on Golden State's part and just trying to protect their medical staff by saying, this was just a freak accident. And he was at no increased risk for getting an Achilles injury. And I think it's been proven in the outside medical community that that's incorrect. What Klay did was he got injured. There are players that have played with ACL injuries and they haven't known they've torn their ACL until after they've played, because their adrenaline kind of limits the amount of swelling. And not only until after the game where they're resting that they notice their knee starts to swell and it gets more difficult to walk and do certain movements. So he was probably feeling great, and not obviously his best, but he's probably feeling fine. And he really wanted to give it a go, but definitely can't blame him. And then once he knew it was an ACL injury, he didn't put himself in risk. He knew that he couldn't come out, and I guess the team had to refrain him. So I thought that was more impressive. I thought KD's actions were kind of, they were dumb. Like, he was trying to prove other people wrong.
Yeah, I think KD's insecurities just caused him to come out and play that game, to be honest.
And also, the way he was playing up until that point, where he wasn't taking players on one-on-one, he was effective and he wasn't putting himself at risk for getting injury. Yes, it could have happened, but the first or the second, I would say, explosive movement that he had to do was where he got injured. The first was when he had to defend Pascal Siakam and Pascal just blew right by him for a layup. And then I think it was two possessions later, it was he just wanted to beat Ibaka because Ibaka was playing him tight, not giving him a 3-point shot. And then boom, it went.
Man, it's a shame.
It is a
major shame.
Yeah.
I love that. Also, I love that Raj just counteracted everyone who says I'm not a doctor with, I'm a partial doctor.
Yeah, well, I'm not an expert like others, but I think it's stated in medical literature that a calf strain definitely does affect the Achilles, and it does lead you to an increased risk for an Achilles injury. It might not be like, oh, like guaranteed Achilles injury, but it does put you at a higher risk.
Yeah. So, I wonder... Sorry, go ahead.
Two things. As a torn Achilles expert myself, I must say that the calf has, you know, a lot of effect on the torn Achilles, as I used to have calf strains almost every single time I played because I never stretched, and that led up to me tearing my Achilles just by walking out a rebound at the three-point line. So that's one. And the second thing is the butterfly effect, in that if KD decided not to come back and play it smart, the Raptors probably win in game five, and then Klay Thompson never gets injured. And then here we are thinking that the Golden State Warriors are the favorites going into next season.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think this case closed at the end of the day. No one wants to see these two great players get injured. I think the Raptors wanted to play the best Golden State team because I think they would have really pushed them to game seven, and who knows what happens there. But I think KD, bad decision. Klay, just bad luck.
Yeah, I mean, where do you go? Where does KD's contract go now? Do you think he opts in and just says, screw it, I'm just going to hang out in Golden State for a year while I rehab? Or do you go get your money in New York and, you know, rehab there? Sign a four-year deal, get paid, let them build up the team around you?
I think before the injury, I think you would have had a guess that KD is going to go to New York.
Oh, but no doubt.
Based on what we've seen from him in the last couple of years and his insecurities and how it's what matters to him, it seems like he just wants to be loved. And if he goes back to Golden State, like, he's going to get a massive ovation, obviously. And he's not going to be as loved as Steph, obviously, but he'll be in that realm now, whereas before he was just seen as an outsider.
But he won't be playing, though, right? Like, what? Do you even think he'd be around when he's rehabbing?
Not necessarily, but who's to say he doesn't come back in March or April?
That's pretty optimistic, no?
Rudy Gay came back within, like, what, 8 months? So, I think
nine and a half.
Was it?
Yeah.
I mean, even still, like, KD's in his prime athletically, and I think that he's going to come back within 8, maybe 10 months at most. And I don't really think that he's going to be like some of the other guys that come back from torn Achilles, because his game is like so well-rounded. Even if he's not quite what he used to be, he's still going to be a 20-plus point per game scorer, and he's still going to be an amazing player.
Yeah, I just hope that he doesn't run into complications. But to answer your question, Peter, I think for him it would be smart kind of to look for a longer-term deal right now. I don't think he's going to sign like a five-year deal. And I think teams will hesitate to do that, but I wouldn't be surprised if he re-signs with Golden State with like a 3-year deal, with the last year being like a player option.
Totally disagree. I think he's going to sign the 5-year deal this offseason. I don't think he's going to extend with Golden State for another year. I don't see why he would sign a shorter term contract. And I don't think teams are going to be scared away by his torn Achilles when he's only 30, 31 years old.
Yeah. I think I would do like if he wanted to leave potentially, because there was like rumors that him obviously going to New York. But I think for him, if he wants to keep that door open, yes. But I think at this point, you kind of have to get your money now. Like, he's due for a big contract, and he'll get it. And he kind of wants to guarantee, like, there is a chance. Like, I don't know how great of a chance that he won't be the same player, but he might not be super max player when he comes back from the injury. He might have another re-injury. And like it really does change. So I think it would be smart for him to get his money. So I don't see a situation where he doesn't do the 5-year, but if he wants to leave that window open for leaving later, he could do like a 3-year, but I could see a 5-year with Golden State as well. I do think he is going to stay now, though.
I don't think players with torn Achilles are going to take any chances and take a short-term contract at this point. Like, it's different from Kawhi, who's going into a situation where he can basically choose his destiny. If he wants to do the 2 years to get a super, super max when he's a 10-year player in a couple of years, he can do that. Or he can sign a 1-year contract and see what Toronto does in the offseason next year when, you know, a bunch of their players are going to be free agents. Or he can sign a 5-year or 4-year with, you know, the Clippers, obviously. Whereas KD, I think his only option right now is to take the 5 years, unless he just wants to shock the world again and, you know, go for one more year with Golden State and see what happens. But I don't see him doing that.
That's what I thought he would do. I thought he would do, like, take his player option in Golden State this year. Rehab, build up the, like, your game again, and then just jump ship to New York next year. I mean, what's the difference between going to New York this year and then next year, right?
Build the hype.
I also think there's a small possibility, especially with Clay being out, that there won't be much basketball. There's like they probably still will end up being a playoff team, but he would, like, based on the timeline, he would be coming back end of March, early April, and that's like what, 5 games if they don't make the playoffs, 5 to 8 games, and that's if everything goes really well. And his rehab, and I think, like, if he does do that, and then he's kind of left in the same spot that he is now coming off the injury, but then there's also, is he the same player, and is he worth the money? And I think you get the money now, especially when teams are offering it. Like, don't risk it to chance. Like, this is your livelihood. This is hundreds of millions of dollars, so get paid now.
That's true. All right, well, moving on. Anthony Davis is, well, I guess he still is technically part of the Pelicans, but there has been a trade made, and he's on his way to LA in exchange for a whole load of stuff. We're looking at Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, and then 3 first-round picks, including the number 4 pick from this year's draft. Josh, did they pay too much for Anthony Davis?
Yes. 100% absolutely yes.
Raj, do you agree?
Of course, Peter, I know you agree as well.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think everyone that knows basketball knows that they paid way too much.
They probably had to, though, right?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
What do you mean?
I think Rob Pelinka is just really bad at negotiating.
This guy signed Kobe to $50 million in his last 2 years with, a torn Achilles already and being a very inefficient shooter. I don't think he's that bad at negotiating.
All right, let me clarify. He's great at being an agent and getting the money for his players, but in terms of negotiating with other general managers, he's terrible. So who's he competing with? Based on the reports, like, Boston wasn't even offering Jason Tatum. If they were, it would have been like Jason Tatum and the Memphis pick next year, which is not even close to what they got. So just to get into the specifics of it, they got the number 4 pick in 2019 for this year's draft. And the Pelicans get the 2021 pick if it's in the top 8. Otherwise, you get an unprotected 2022 pick when LeBron's going to be 38 years old. And they get an unprotected pick swap in 2023. And then an unprotected first rounder in 2024, which the Pelicans can defer to 2025 if the pick isn't that great. So they basically gave them the war chest. And, like, there's no protections on the pick, which smarter GMs have done since, you know, Daryl Morey sort of, you know, created that line of thinking and doing so. And, like, I think it was like 2013 or 14. I think that was the first had pick protections up to, like, you know, the lottery or whatever. And these picks are not even protected at all. So when LeBron gets old and you have, you know, LeBron and AD's massive contracts on the books and you're going to be, you know, tied in terms of what you can pay other players, you also don't have any draft picks in order to improve your roster. So the Lakers better win in the next 2 years or they're fucked.
Yeah. I think you laid it out very eloquently. And I'm just going to say they're going to have a lot of money, like you said, in 2 players. And these 2 players are obviously getting older. They're not, LeBron's obviously the older player. Anthony Davis probably still has a good 8 more years in him. But they're giving up the future, like, completely. And they're really hoping that they're not going to be a bottom 10 team in the NBA for the next 10 years or 8 years. Like, that's what they're hoping on.
Well, and the Pelicans are betting that they're going to, because their management's been terrible. So, I mean, if they have 1 or 2 years where, you know, one of those guys gets injured or they just can't build the roster properly and they're in the lottery, the Pelicans have already won this trade. But the same time, like, Anthony Davis is an amazing player and he's a top 3, arguably top 5 type of player, obviously. But do you trust Lakers management to work with the $23 million they have left this year to build a roster around 3 guys on the roster? The only other guys they have on the roster right now are Isaac Bonga. I don't even know who this guy is. And Moritz Wagner, who barely even played this year. Did Bonga even play this year?
Show some respect. Yeah, he played the garbage time.
I've never actually seen him play before, and I've watched my share of basketball games. I never heard of this guy.
What about Kyle Kuzma?
Yeah, they got Kuz.
They still have Kuz. He's their third player, right? But yeah. Everyone else is either on a restricted type of deal where they have to wait it out to see who else they get. Like, they still have Bullock, who they might re-sign, and then they have Caruso, who's restricted as well, so they're going to have to wait until they see what they get in free agency before even thinking about bringing these guys back.
I hope New Orleans offers Caruso a fat contract. just keep playing these games with him.
Yeah.
And the other negotiating tactic they messed up on is, according to ESPN, if the trade goes through on July 6th, the Lakers only have $23 million in cap space. But if the Pelicans choose to delay the trade going through until July 30th, the Lakers would have $31 or $32 million in cap space, which is basically near a max slot. So why would the Pelicans choose to delay it until the 30th, unless the Lakers give them even more compensation, which hasn't been agreed to yet? So this might be a situation where they just hold the Lakers hostage, or else the Lakers are really going to have to, you know, pick from the bottom of the barrel once they get one or two players and get a bunch of guys on minimum contracts, so they have no money left.
Yeah.
How would that affect New Orleans' salary cap, though?
From their side of things, I mean, they're just building their team right now, right? So it's hard to say what they're going to do with Jrue Holiday. Like, he's the biggest contract in their books right now. So it's a matter of, do they want to go the Houston route and stay competitive the next couple of years until they're able to take this war chest of picks and then turn that into, like, another amazing top 10, top 15 player to pair with Zion? Or are they going to just go the young route and get rid of Holiday and try to get as much as they can for him this year, and then just keep building through the draft and then just, again, wait until these picks come into fruition?
He gone.
Like, Holiday will get a lot of, you know, interest across the league, too. There's a lot of teams that would want him to go from good to great.
You know how much he makes?
$25 million? 28?
Yeah, next year he's making $26.
Mm.
That's not wild.
For a good contract. Yeah, it's a good contract.
For him?
Yeah.
For both, man. Yeah. But, as long as he stays healthy, obviously.
Yeah.
Peter, I think you would have to agree as well, like, with what Josh said. Like, they were the only bidder. Like, if I was the Lakers, I would kind of know that Anthony Davis is disgruntled. He's probably not even going to want to show up to training camp. He's probably going to have his mindset on leaving. They gave up players that are, I would say, good players, good NBA players, and they gave up the future for one player in Anthony Davis, like just one. And Anthony Davis, obviously, he's top six player in the NBA, and he does have some injury concerns, and LeBron has coming off an injury year, and he's older. So if one of those guys goes down, like, your team is pretty much a lottery team.
Yeah, but this is classic LeBron, though. Right, like every team that he goes to, he sort of holds them hostage until, well, especially in Cleveland. I guess not so much in LA now, but every year has to be a winning year for LeBron. He has to be in contention every year. That's why Cleveland essentially traded away like 8 draft picks in 5 years. It's all just so they could build around LeBron, just to give him enough shooters on the ends or enough defenders. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is exactly in line with what LeBron wants to do, because after 3 more years, he doesn't care. The 2023 pick has nothing to do with LeBron.
Oh no, it's not even 2022.
Yeah, exactly. Even better.
Yeah, like, I think one thing that, well, obviously LeBron, we've mentioned, kind of like, he's always, especially since Miami, he's always had that hand in the team affairs. I think, especially with his agent being Anthony Davis's agent as well, but I think one thing that is, like, kind of, like, hidden or not talked about, Anthony Davis only had 1 year left on his contract. Like, that in itself is leverage for the Lakers. Because...
Yeah, this is a... Yeah.
Like, it's not like Anthony Davis had 5 years left or 4 years left and you really want to have him on a cheap... not cheap, but, like, a good contract, and you can build around that. Like, you are basically buying 1 year of Anthony Davis... And he wants to re-sign with the Lakers. Like, he would have been a Laker in 2020. And you're basically giving up 3 players, good players on an NBA roster. And you're giving up, 3 total first-round draft picks. And one of them being the number 4 pick, which apparently there was a rumor that I think we talked about briefly, not on this pod, but we talked about it being used in a deal with Bradley Beal, which is a great NBA player. And you're giving all that up for 1 year of Anthony Davis. I think that's like a huge ripoff for the Lakers. And they literally show no negotiation tactic here.
I think we also have to look at it from the other side too, with the Lakers. I mean, obviously David Griffin had all the leverage in this deal and he knew that and he used that to his advantage. And that's why he got probably the greatest return for an NBA player in NBA history, getting three good young players. Or good prospects, at least, and then getting three unprotected picks. But from the Lakers side of things, like if they actually had good management, you would look at this and be like, okay, you got LeBron and Anthony Davis, two top five players, and you have a GM, not in this case, obviously, that can easily build around them and make this like a 2 or 3 year run. But do you trust Rob Pelinka to bring in players with $23.7 million in salary cap space this offseason and either win a championship next year or at least extend the run for 2 or 3 more years as LeBron gets older and becomes, you know, it's like 38, 39 years old. Do I trust him to do that? Fuck no. But if you had like a good GM, like Masai Ujiri, you'd be like, okay, yeah, exactly. If you had one of those guys, you'd be like, all right, they could probably make this work and then find another way to get at least 2 or 3 good players to go around with these guys. And the issue that they have going into next year is, we've already mentioned this, but just having those two great players and then some bit players around them, like, are they going to be able to last the entire regular season and not get injured? And then going into the playoffs, we saw this year how important depth was going into the finals and throughout the, you know, latter parts of the play. So they're going to have to find some reliable players that don't have a history of being injury prone, because we know Anthony Davis has had that, you know, those problems the last couple of years, and LeBron obviously showed a crack in his armor last year.
Yeah, and I think you have Anthony Davis, one player, and then you have 2 second overall picks in Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball. You have the 4th overall pick, which is this year's. You have another first-round draft pick, I know later in the draft, I think 30th overall in Josh Hart. And then you have 2 more first-round draft picks. That's 6 first-round draft picks for Anthony Davis. And if this Anthony Davis, let's say, gets any sort of injury this year, they're not making the playoffs. And they're going to be a lottery team. And that one-year rental for 6 picks, first-round draft picks, was a waste.
True, but if they win a championship either this year or next, it's totally worth it.
No, but next year they would have got Anthony Davis. Like, the smarter move would have been to move those players, like Lonzo Ball,
Brandon
Ingram.
That's not possible with LeBron. I mean, he's already 34, 35. They don't want to waste another year of his prime.
You literally just can't wait.
No, but it's not waiting. It's you move those players. No, you move those players. You get players that you could build with Anthony Davis and LeBron. You're still going to be competitive in the West. Like, with LeBron and a few good other pieces, like good players, like I'm talking players like Bradley Beal, or let's say if they wanted,
you're talking about a hypothetical fantasy world though, because obviously we know how much power LeBron has behind the scenes, and LeBron was definitely behind this trade.
Yeah, no, I think the fact that Rich Paul is part of Clutch Sports definitely made it definitely helped this deal go through this year. But I just think that if you wanted to win, you had a good chance of putting together a very good team, and then you add Anthony Davis, you're pretty much almost guaranteed to go to the finals in 2020, and you have a good chance this year, especially with Golden State being injured. Like, especially that fact. Like, Denver's still good. Utah's probably going to be, like, a good team as well. I don't think Portland's going to make enough moves. They kind of are in that treadmill zone, and the Rockets are just going to get older. And you probably had a very good chance with a few good pieces around LeBron, and then you add Anthony Davis the year after. The last 2 years of LeBron's contract would be like championship winning years, and you're not giving up the farm.
On the other side of the coin, though, if LeBron wasn't a meddler, which we obviously know that he is, if you go your route and just keep these young players and then...
No, not keep them. You get rid of them, but you build the team that Anthony Davis will join in 2020.
No, but the problem is if you do that, you're adding on salary, though. And then you may not be
able to. And then you wouldn't be able to afford Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I understand that. But you can still add like a player like Bradley Beal.
Bradley Beal's like $30 million.
Hey, he's making a lot of money the next couple of years.
That's the problem. Like, they're sort of just stuck.
Yeah. All right.
Because Anthony Davis is going to demand at least $40 million next year.
And LeBron, oh, he's getting his money for sure. And that's the problem LeBron. They have going into next year, too. They're going to be paying LeBron and Anthony Davis like 75% of the cap.
Yeah.
Then you got Kuzma coming up under a rookie scale contract, who's going to probably demand, you know, 20 if he plays well next year. So.
And then how do you pay Kentavious Caldwell-Pope his $15 million? You know, you're sort of stuck here.
I think that's going to be the funniest part of the offseason when KCP takes like a minimum contract because of how much money he's made the last couple of years.
And it's still going to be in LA.
That's 100%. Like, yeah. Rich Paul's going to be like, I made you
$30 million that you didn't deserve.
Years or
you
can 2 years, whatever it was. Million. You are taking this million out. Yeah. Or you're going to China. Ron's going to send you off to Siberia.
Make more money in China, though.
Probably. You can make play with Jeremy 12. Lin.
Wow, shots. That's so unnecessary.
You know that's happening.
So rude.
All right, one last thing. I just want to... Is there any chance that this trade doesn't go through from now until July 6th or July whatever?
I mean, it'd be hilarious.
If Lonzo Ball fails his physical.
Yeah, or if they pull out.
Yeah, he just wants to stay in LA.
That'd be amazing. That'd be a genius move by LeVar. He just cracks up Lonzo above the head. Or like breaks his arm for a bit, breaks a finger just enough so that you don't pass the physical, and then the whole thing falls through. LeBron stuck with Lonzo. We figured out a way for LA to get out of it.
Genius. The other side of things is like Brandon Ingram still has a heart thing, so who knows?
Yeah, that's true. But as the team receiving the injured player, you have the ability to to look past the physical results, right?
Yeah, it's your choice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's whether you want to take on the risk or not. So I'm sure they know what they're doing. David Griffin ain't no fool.
I even think if you don't get Brandon Ingram, it's still a very good deal for New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right, I think that's all the time we've had for this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Anchor, all the major podcast platforms.
Should I just break this news right now, or should we just go off the air? According to Vincent Goodwill of Yahoo Sports, Chris Paul is demanding a trade from Houston as his relationship with James Harden is unsalvageable.
Oof.
I love it.
Well, let it start. This is like this is like Christmas Eve, but it came like 2 weeks early.
Screw you, Chris Paul.
The second toughest contract in the NBA to move now wants to be traded. That should be interesting.
Who's the first toughest?
Well, John Wall.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm just making sure. Anyways, hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And unless something else breaks soon, we'll see you next time. Peace.
You stay.